What's up, everyone, and welcome to the 18th episode of the Sad Nauz CEDH podcast. Mana Beast. I'm Keen, otherwise known as Varlis, and joining me, as always, is Adam, otherwise known as Poppy Phobia. Today,
what's up, everybody?
We have the big bear himself. Fuck you,
good
Adam.
Fuck, bro.
We have the big bear himself, otherwise known as Tishu. Anyways, we're hopping right into it. But before we do, Adam, I think we have some triggers to resolve in our upkeep.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, clearly,
game action.
Yeah, we're clearly not rusty from last time. So, yeah, to start off, speaking of, I want to apologize. All of us would like to apologize for the late upload. We haven't uploaded a podcast in about a month here. We've kind of been swamped after chaos and everything. Scheduling's been really hard for us, trying to get all the team together to record episodes. So, yeah, hopefully after this week, we'll be back to our schedule. We've been saving up the Patreon money that we've been getting. We're going to buy a bunch of stuff to do a gameplay setup so we can start putting gameplay stuff on the channel. So we're actually really excited for like all the new stuff that we got going on. So look forward to that. Otherwise, let's move to our upkeep. So to start with, we're going to shout out all of our high-tier patrons. We got some new ones since the last time we had an episode, so it's really awesome to see. Thank you to Dute, Usable Object, Senator Tom, Scorish, Sora Flower, Jeff Bezos, and Domino. The support from everybody's been amazing, and it helps us to keep making these videos. Finally, don't forget to smash that like button and hit subscribe. And for those of you listening on a podcast platform like Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please make sure you leave us a review and a rating because it helps us to reach new audiences. And with that, I think we're going to move on to the main phase. So for this episode, we are going to be talking about the importance of mana base in CDH. We did a deck building episode. I think it was like our fifth episode or something like that. But we didn't really speak on the importance of mana base in general. So we thought that
it
deserved
number 12.
Number 12. Okay, I was way off then. But we thought that it deserved its own episode. And so with that, we'll get right into the main topic. So I think the overarching question that we have in regards to mana base and CDH, and one that we see all the time in every Discord that we're in, no matter what deck you're talking about, it's always, what's the optimal amount of lands that I should be running in my deck? And I think that's a question that is not very easy to answer because it changes, like, no matter what fucking deck you're playing. But I know that we have some like really strong opinions about what we think a minimal land count is, what we think a maximum land count is. And we kind of fight internally in our play group and in our brew circle about that shit all the time. So, I won't share my opinions right away, but, I know someone who's very passionate about mana base in CDH is our boy Kevin over here. So I'll let him kind of lead off the discussion.
Well, okay, I guess we'll start it off with a simple one of how you actually build your mana base, right? Like, how does your overall, like, pip total or what, like, your mana requirements, how does it affect what lands you put in, obviously? Because, like, you can bitch about numbers all day, and I will, but, like, how do you pick which ones you use, right? Like, oh, I just throw in all the five-color lands. Like, what if you don't need them? What if your two-color deck is really a one-color deck that splashes another color? What if your
some of the five-color lands are fucking ass, too.
Yeah, a lot of them are. But, like, you know, you're playing fucking blue farm, right? You're not really playing white. I mean, like, you are, but you're not. So, like, you don't go as hard on as many white lands as you do, say, black lands. So, Kian, let's start with you. How do you start picking lands for your decks?
All right, so I like the deflection. You've been really learning a lot from our political episodes.
What?
No, I'm joking.
No, it's just funny because you're like, what's the difference between the white lands and the black lands? Well, there's five other
lands.
Colors. And.
All right,
come
so anyways.
On, bro. I'm just picking colors. I mean, it's a deck that runs both colors.
All right, so I think that the I'll start with optimal. I'll say the most optimal lands I feel for decks is between 27 and 28. I really don't think, especially in like today's CDH climate, there's just way too many cards that you can be running, and all like the general mana bases or the CMC of most decks are pretty like low, so you don't need to be ramping out big dumb idiots. Like there's too many slots. If you run like 30, I think there's only one deck that should run 30 lands, and that's Gitrog. And that has an excuse. Any other
Gitrog runs way more than 30 lands.
35. Yeah, like 30, whatever. I think there's like...
I don't know. I think that number changes constantly. So like for me, I think that if you're running any type of strategy that's trying to win the game at a very fast pace, you can start cutting lands like super significantly, especially if you're running like a lot of acceleration, whether that be dorks, whether that be mana rocks, whether that be soul lands. Like there's so many types of acceleration when it comes to your mana base that you don't need to be running an exuberant amount of lands, right? Something that I think is a little bit like underrated is the type of archetype or strategy that your deck is playing in. So like stacks decks, I think stacks decks can easily run 30 lands, sometimes run even more, especially if you're like a stacks deck that doesn't have colors that you can ramp in. So like mono white is really, really hard to ramp in, especially if you're not on like a very like strategic type of strategy. Like if you're on a enchantment strategy, then sure, you can run like Sarah Sanctum and it's the white Gaia's Cradle, but other than that, like it's really, really hard to accelerate your mana, especially with
I agree, like it's archetype dependent, but for like other archetypes besides stacks is kind of like the outlier. But every other deck either has mana acceleration and mana rocks or dorks. So those are all mana sources. So you don't really need to be running like 30 to 31 lands in like a Grixis deck. You have mana rocks or in another
or green rituals.
Deck that's not
Gitrog.
Rituals that gets
and mana dorks.
That gets into my ideas. I don't actually really give a fuck how many lands you run, right? Like, lands, I agree with you. Lands are, like, bad. They're fucking bad cards. Like, they don't do anything except make mana. And you can only play one a turn, so, like, they're kind of shitty, right? So, like, I care more about the concept of a mana source. And to me, there's two types of mana sources. There's fast ones, like untapped lands, you know, 0 and 1 mana artifacts that make more than what they cost. Rituals are often fast. And then there's slow ones, like the dorks, and then, like, some kind of weird, you know, like, the soul lands that make, like, 2, but they come in tapped, like the weird shit. So, for me, it's more important that you have a total amount of mana sources you can rely on. Like, if you run 15 mana rocks, and you can reliably play damn near all of them on turn 1, that's kind of like you're running 27 lands plus 15 mana rocks, which, you know, together, you're like, oh, I have, like, 43 mana sources or whatever. Like, that's not bad, you know? That looks like a more reasonable list. But if you come in and fucking tell me you're running 6 mana rocks and 21 lands, like, I'm just going to call you a dipshit. Like, you're never going to be able to cast your cards. Like, and for me, I'm purely math-based, right? Like, we can talk about shit all day long about how decks feel certain ways and whatever. You just run a hypergeometric calculator. That's all you do. You decide how many mana sources you can realistically play on turn 1, you slam that shit into the calculator, and you accept, okay, cool, 72% chance I can play the game. 28% of the time, I'm mulliganing because of my lands being shitty or my mana being shitty. That's a choice you make. I personally go a little higher. I still like running those mana rocks, but if you run a low mana rock deck, obviously you got to bring your lands up or your dorks up or something. But in general, for me, I don't like mulliganing good hands because I had the wrong lands or that I just didn't have enough lands. Like, it feels terrible to lose a 1-4 all of the fucking time just because you don't have good lands.
Yeah, I think that, like, mulligan decisions being affected by lands is also kind of a issue that you get a feel for when you're playing the game. Something that I'll say is that, like, a lot of the times, like, I'm not finding myself mulliganing, like, good hands because I'm not making enough mana, right? Like usually that's like, if you're saying like you run your mana base through a geometric calculator, and if you get a 78% chance that like you'll have 2 lands in your hand on a mulligan, it's like, that seems way too high to me. Like, you get a free mulligan in the first place. Like, so I would be like almost saying like I would like, I think your mulligans are fine up until 5. Once you mulligan down to 5, then it's like, okay, this is risky. But like, 5 cards in my hand never feels bad, yeah, especially like, when it's a sculpted 5.
Let me fucking get a thing up real quick, right? Let's say you have a 75% chance that you get 2 like mana sources. We'll just run and pretend we have 75% chance to get 2 mana sources or more in any given hand, right? With 7 cards. So you just run that through three times. Our chance of failure is 25%. So what's the chance that I fail three times in a row, i.e. mull to five? It's going to be 25 times 25. It's about a 98.5% chance you get a playable hand by your six-hand mulligan, right? That's not too bad. Let's go ahead and lower that down to 65% chance. You know, you're now going to run... You've bumped yourself up to a 4% chance to have to go down to... Or, like, 4.3% chance to have to go down to 5. Which isn't big, but that's a 1 in 20 almost. Like
but what's the land count difference, though? That's, like, what I'm...
I mean, again, we'd have to sit down and do actual math homework, and I don't think anyone here wants to do that. But like,
I'm going to throw some numbers. I'm going to pull some numbers out of my ass.
Obscure numbers into this calculator.
I can throw it right here. I can show you.
Hey, guys, here at Satnaws, we value honesty and truth. So anyways, I started plugging in numbers in my calculator.
Okay, you take 0.35 and multiply it times itself three times. Fucking
yeah, that's cool. What does that do?
It tells you the probability that you have to throw away to mull to five.
How many lands am I running to dictate that number?
The 0.35% number.
Probably about 27 or 28, right?
We didn't know that.
Fine, motherfucker. I'm going to pull up a hypergeometric calculator right now and waste right. 6 minutes on this.
Then another point I wanted to add. So when we'll be mentioning soul lands a lot in this episode, and for those of you that don't know what soul lands are, soul lands are any lands like Ancient Tomb, City of Traders, Crystal Vein. It's lands that come in untapped and can tap for 2 mana.
Yeah, so like I guess to get back on topic a little bit, when we're discussing like your mana base in CDH, I feel like people hearken on it way too much because like people will look at a scenario where like you'll show somebody a list and they'll be like, oh my gosh, why are you on 29 lands? You should be on 27 lands. And like that's 2 more card slots that you could have in your deck list right now and yada, yada, yada. And honestly, it just depends on your feel when you're playing a deck. Like I found that 28 is a really good number for me. And if I run a lot of mana rocks and a lot of acceleration, I'll go down from that point. But like I know people all the time that are like consistency matters to me more than anything, and I'd rather have 3 lands in my hand and good spells than, you know, 1 land and it's all gas, you know. And that's true, and it happens a lot, right? Like you want to have lands in play because if you get hit with a oof or you get hit with a Stony Silence, like now all of a sudden your gas hand is turned off and it can be really, really shitty. If there's a Rule of Law in play, your 1 land into 2 rituals into Adnaz isn't good anymore because you can't ritual off. Right. So there's like a fine balance there between how many lands do you run, because statistically what you want to be doing is you want to be putting a land down every turn that you can. It's literally a free spell, basically, because in CDH, mana is a resource that we equate to the spells that we cast, simply because so many of our spells are dedicated to just producing mana. So if you consider a land to just be a free spell every turn that generates 1 mana, that's really what it is. So it's hard to balance that resource number, especially when like we're really running so many less lands in our deck than we should be. When you consider like how many lands that 60 cards players like will play in their decks, and then how many lands we play as 100 card players, it's actually like way, like we're way low on what we should be playing. Like it says like we should be running like 35 to 40 lands, and we're all running like 30 or less besides like a few decks. So it's kind of like interesting to see how mana bases are built, but it's because in CDH your games aren't going past turn 3, and the consistency of like 2 lands being enough to win you the game is usually the case. That's just kind of how our format is built. So you don't need to be having your deck be 40% lands because you're not getting to that point. It's not like standard where you're going 12 turns and you need to hit a land trap every turn, you know? So it's an interesting question, and I think it changes like so often and so much. But like, I know for me personally, I really sit at like 28 lands is like my starting point, and I goldfish a shit ton, and I goldfish a lot, and I start to look at my hands and see what I'm missing and where I feel like I need it. And like, you need to have lands that produce colored mana as well, because like some of the best lands in the game produce 2 mana as a colorless source, but they don't cast you any spells besides artifacts. So like, I don't know, there's a real big balance there between like how you build your mana base, and it's kind of difficult to just like say like this is how many lands you should run in your deck, this is tried and true, and anything you do more or less than this is because you're an idiot. Like, I don't think that that's a fair argument.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really generally what the final answer is that, like, you can argue all day about one land, and it will change your probability. And you can sit and you can literally calculate, like I am doing right now, how likely you are to mulligan just purely off of fucking up your lands. But, like, are you really worried about a 0.5% chance? Like, yeah, over 200 games, you're going to, like, effectively, like, lose the game because you mulled the 5 once. But, like, are you okay with that to, like, slightly increase your card quality? And, like, the answer is that's too hard to calculate. Like, you can do simple calculations of, like, how often will I mulligan, but you can't turn that into what's my win rate change. It's too hard. So for you, it is, I agree, more of a feel. Like, you're going to decide, like, am I pissed off because I just keep fucking not getting enough lands? Or are you like Spencer and you're like, I draw 7 lands every game. I'm sick of this. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. That's up to you. That's your own personal decision. Or, hear me out, play Gitrog, run 54 mana sources, and just literally always be able to keep every hand.
I will say that, like, in green decks, dude, I've learned, like, I've been playing Timna Thrasios for, like, a while now. And maybe we want to touch on, at some point, the decks that we're playing. Because I know a lot of us have switched our decks, like, from when we first started recording these episodes. Like, we're on either new decks, old decks, or just, like, completely changed. Like, we're not playing the same decks that we started with. But, like, lately I've been playing, like, Timna Thrasios, Hermit Druid, and playing green makes the shittiest hands so keepable. It's fucking ridiculous because your play patterns are just land, dork, pass, and then you do something on turn two. You have 2 mana, right? Like, it just makes, like, really bad hands really good.
It's the bait of mid-range. Is almost every green mid-range hand, you're like, yo, I could play a 3-drop on turn 2. And, like, you just keep the hand, and then you're like, ah, I shouldn't have kept this shit. It sucks.
You're like, I didn't even have a 3-drop to play. I don't know why I kept this hand.
I could play Timna on turn 2. Let's fucking go.
Let's go.
The amount of turn 2 Rhystic Studies I've cast is fucking, it's like a drug, man. I can't get over it.
Yeah, and that gets into a whole different discussion. I don't even know if we have planned of, like, you know, for like real CDH, which is like tournament play, when you're going to play like 7+ games to try to, you know, become the champion, put the crown on your head, do you go for the tried and true, the fucking BGX Jund mid-range that has a 55% win rate, right? Or do you do the fucking YOLO combo strategy that just flips coins all day and you hope you flip more heads than your opponents? Because that was a discussion in, like, you know, 60-card tournaments, is do you play the deck that's consistent? And you're like, you have a good chance of getting there sometimes. Or do you play the YOLO deck and just hope that you get good matchups and fucking slide up to first place? And I think that's another topic about CDH tournaments we could discuss. Like, do you run Silas Rog and hope you just cream people because you go faster and you just drew 7 great fucking hands in a row and 7 games? Or do you play, like, your mid-range blue farm and you consistently win, but maybe that's not enough to get there? I don't know.
Yeah,
I think that would be a topic for a different episode.
Oh, I know, but I'm saying sure. This whole mana base thing,
yeah,
like, it's they're interlinked. They're the same fucking question, sure. But a different flavor.
For sure. And for reference of, like, a typical legacy deck runs, let's see, I pulled it up, 25 to 30 lands.
Out of 60?
And 60 cards.
That would equate to 41.6 lands in our format. We ain't playing that many.
No. No, we're not. So, Kevin, I think you want to ask the next question here.
Let's see. Where are we at? Asked about the pip totals. Got the soul lands. We done that one yet?
Well, we haven't really discussed pip intensity at all, so yeah. You can...
Ah, you see, because yeah. I asked that question, and I was like, I'm pretty confused here. So, yeah. So, like, how do you actually decide what lands you're going to play, which is what I originally, you know, started off with. Like, I personally prioritize, like, I play a lot of 4-color lists, and I like 5-color, too. I mean, you've probably heard. So, obviously, I'm going to put every fetch in I can play. Like, fetches are just good. Well, you put in pretty much all the duels you can play, except Plateau, because that card fucking should never have been printed. You know, you're going to play a lot of the shocks that you should be playing. Maybe not all of them, but, like, I play Timna Thrasios as well. Like,
decent amount.
It's a bug deck with white, so I run all of the bug shocks, right? In Najeela, I need Thoracle mana, so I run Watery Grave, and I need fucking Najeela plus Dork mana, so I run, I think I run Stomping Ground, I don't mind a change. But, like, you know, I think you always run all of your available fetches. You run pretty much every duel you can, some of the good shocks. And then you ask yourself, okay, well, I'm gonna run Command Tower, right? Like, it's pretty basic. But then, like, do you run Mana Confluence? Like, in usually, but, like, maybe not always. Do you run the Horizon Canopy lands? Like, I don't know. Do I have too many pain lands? Do I need more duels? Right? Like how do you evaluate lands and when you're deciding? Because, like, I definitely have gone through this problem of being like, do I want another shock or do I want the Horizon Canopy land? Like, ooh, can I run Forbidden Orchard in this deck? Do I care if I give them a 1/1? Like, oh, can I run Tarnished Citadel? Like, how important is my Nas? Like, I'm a big Tarnished Citadel fan, but I know you guys aren't. So,
yeah.
Adam can take it.
I think that I have a lot of opinions on this, so I'd like to go first. So, like, when it comes to, like, picking my mana base in CDH, those factors weigh in so heavily to, like, the types of strategies I play. So you kind of touched on it earlier when you were saying that, like, oh, like, if you're a deck like Blue Farm, right, like, white isn't your color identity. But outside of, like, three very important spells, which are, like, possibly Grand Abolisher, Silence, Esper Sentinel, and Ranger Captain Vios, you're not really casting any white card besides Timna for the majority of the game. So, like, how many white mana sources do you need in your list? Not a whole lot, because usually one white mana source and a gold land or a rock is good enough. So, like, in higher color density decks, so, like, four color and up, I think you have to prioritize the gold lands first. So when I refer to gold lands, I'm referring to lands that tap for all five colors. So, like, examples of this are, like, City of Brass, Command Tower. Decks that, like, historically have the gold borders around them usually indicate that they tap for five colors. If you're an artifact-heavy deck, you can include lands like... what's the one that you, if you control an artifact, you can tap it and lose a life?
Glimmer Void.
Not Glimmer Void.
Glimmer Void, and then there's the...
Oh, Spire of Industry.
Spire of Industry. So, like, deck, like five color lands like that, I would usually prioritize first. Then I would get into, like, the duels that you need to play. So, all the original duels. I would then go into the shocks. I would then go into, like, certain utility lands. So, like, there's certain dual lands that, like the battle bond lands, the opponent lands. I think those lands are amazing in our format. Like, the only downside is that they're, like, non-fetchable, but you can make that sacrifice for, like, just drawing them, right? And then after that, I usually prioritize, like, the horizon lands, or then, like, utility lands that don't really do a whole lot, and then the fetch lands. And I think that the fetch lands are sometimes a little overvalued in our format, especially lately with, like, the prevalence of Oof. Or not Oof. Why did I say Oof? The prevalence of Oppo makes, like, a lot of my fetchland hands so ass. And it's been, like, more and more prevalent lately. Like, the more games I play, the more games end up having two, sometimes three opposition agents in play. And it's kind of, like, backbreaking for majority of the game. So, like, I think you try to keep down the fetch lands to, like, the absolute necessities. It's deck filtering, too, which is something to consider. It's like you have 30 lands, but in actuality, you're really only casting 20 of them because 10 of them are fetches sometimes, you know?
I don't know. So, I feel like I'm going to disagree with you on the fetches here because, like, yeah, sure, your fetches can get punished, whatever, but, like, fetches are by far the strongest lands, like, land cycle that has been printed. And that would be, like, arguing that, like, oh, you shouldn't get a car. It might break down. You should walk instead. Like, I'll fucking take the risk. Like, yeah, it's going to suck, but, like, I don't give a fuck. I would much rather have that consistency.
Okay, yeah,
I'm with Kevin on this one. When I first start with matter base, the first thing I look at is how many fetches do I need to run and how many fetches can I play, and then what duels do I play? I think that's the most important. Because fetches get the mana sources, and they deck thin. And they're just really powerful in general.
The deck thinning in fetch lands, I don't think is minor. I think, like, in CDH, like, that's, like, the best source of deck thinning comparative to, like, what other people will use as excuses for deck thinning. Fetch lands actually get two cards out of your deck every time that you play them. So, I don't know. That's a lot.
I've seen people do the math behind it. It's really small. But I don't think it's insignificant. I just think it's barely significant.
It's small. In other formats, like 60 card, it's significant, but not really.
I think it is. People would argue, and they're like, oh, it's only a 1.7% chance over 1,000 games. And I'm like, Yeah, bro, that's 17 fucking games. Like, that's
when
a big deal.
When you're running decks that only run 25 lands, every fetch land is such significant deck thinning because you're removing two of those lands every time that you're playing a fetch land. If you've
not
cast
really,
it,
you already had one in hand.
You already had one in your hand, so you're removing one.
I mean, I get your point, right? Like, I think it's there. I don't think it's super huge, but I think it's there. For me, I think you're not, like, immediate love of fetch lands, to me, says that you've never played a five-color list that 100% cannot fucking stumble. Like, I don't even play the crazy YOLO Najeela, and, like, I literally have to have turn one, I need red and green. Turn two, I need blue and black and red and green. And then turn three, I need white. And then turn four, I need two more black. And, like, you can't fuck around. Like, you need to pick exact, very specific lands. And without the 10 fetches, like, you're just not going to get there consistently. There's not enough five-color lands to fill in that, like, gap of needing these insane mana cost splits, right? Like, if I want to cast Derevi on turn three after an Najeela, that is a minimum of four specific pips I need, not including probably the Black Tutor to get it and the fucking Counterspell to hold back up. Like, you need a lot of really, really difficult, like, brutal pips. So, I think fetches by far the one, like, I would take a fetch before a five color land. No cap.
I think it depends
on what list. I don't think I would ever do that.
Yeah, I think it depends on what list you're running or what, like, what archetype. I think this
whole. Let me specify. This whole command towers.
I mean, almost all the five color lands aren't.
I think this whole subject is. I lost my. God damn it.
That's fine. I'll just interrupt you again. I think that all the five color lands.
The thing is.
Lucky and go.
He can't finish. Okay. I think that all the five color lands are so good. I prioritize five color lands in two color lists just because of the amount of like cards that you have that can steal cards from your opponent's deck that require you to pay the mana cost of the cards. Like, I don't know, man. I just think five color lands, like every five color land that they print that's at all halfway decent immediately gets slotted into every deck that you see. So
I think this whole subject that we're talking about is like very subjective to the archetype that people want to play, right? So, and like different lands fit into the different archetypes, right? Because like if we're playing a three color plus pile, gold lands are fucking amazing, right? Gold lands do everything you need them to do. They're fucking great. But in like two color and like mono color lists, they're dog shit. Like, why would you be running this instead of like a fetch land or like just like a basic, right? So,
Because it's way better than a basic.
I'm kind of with Kian. If you're running a black two-color list, like, Mana Confluence, after enough turns, can fucking start to suck. Like,
why would
if you're
you
a
take
Nos
damage?
List, it feels bad. Now, given, I still would
just win the game faster.
Just
win the game, forehead. Mana Confluence, you should only be able to Mana Confluence, like, three times. You lose three life, you took a bolt, and then you won the game. Like, that's, you know,
yeah,
that's
okay.
How I look at it.
How many times have you done this, Adam?
You're arguing that Tarnished Citadel is also playable.
No, because Tarnished Citadel bolts you every time. So in three turns, that's nine life. You took three bolts.
Well, you should have just won the game by now, dude. You should have just won the game. Just do it.
Plus,
nine life over three life is...
You should have just won the game, dude. You should have won the game.
That's something that's actually, like, I think that colorless lands are fucking ass outside of the only two good colorless lands that exist, which are Ancient Tomb and City of Traders. Otherwise, colorless lands are not good. Like, Tarnished Citadel's argument of, like, well, it taps for colorless. Like, okay, how many mana rocks do you see people play that just tap for one colorless? None.
Okay, so
it's not about
the colorless, man. The idea
Talisman
is when you tap
of
for fucking, it's when you tap for Adnaz, if you already have your two black sources... It is a five-color land that doesn't hurt you. That's my big argument.
But the problem is, like, you keep a two-land hand, and your second land is Tarnished Citadel, and then you're bolting yourself for three just to fucking cast. Like,
stop being a bitch and just fucking do it.
No,
because like,
I play Tarnished Citadel over like Spire of Industry, or the.
If you don't run enough artifacts.
Or the creature.
I don't like conditional lands. Fuck that. I want a land that always fucking makes mana if I need it. Yeah, it sure hurts, but fuck it.
Just play a different land. There's so many lands in the game. You don't need to play Tarnished Citadel.
Play Tarnished Citadel.
I feel like don't encourage people
to play Tarnished Citadel.
Tell me how Tarnished Citadel. Okay, the only Mana Crypt costs zero mana, has the chance to bolt you every turn, doesn't, and produces twice as much mana as Tarnished Citadel. Why would I play Tarnished Citadel?
Because it's a land that makes five colors. Mana Crypt makes no colors. that's not even a comparable thing. You're like, why would I eat this banana when I can fucking take an airplane? That doesn't make any fuck sense. Like,
yeah, it does. I would rather take an airplane. I could fly to a forest full of bananas. Why would I eat the one banana?
Why don't you go do that? Why don't you fucking bada boom? Because you're fucking too dumb to have this podcast. Tarnus Citadel, good card.
I think there's a five-color. So
it's the same thing as the Painlands, right?
Forbidden Orchard is better than Tarnus Citadel, and Forbidden Orchard gives your opponents resources.
I agree. But Forbidden Orchard is a good land because it makes five colors.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, so, Adam, I think you want to ask the next question.
Do I have the next question? Let me look. Okay. Here we go. This ties in perfect to what I was just saying. What is the importance of soul lands, and why are we as a format transitioning towards a greedier mana base? So, like, I think as this format is evolving, we're starting to see a bigger and wider acceptance of, like, what the best decks in the meta are. Specifically, like, you look at decks like any of the Rograk decks, so, like, Timna Rog, like, Silas Rog, any of these decks that, like...
Rog is Pog. Rog is Pog.
Yes, did Rog is... Yeah. We never abandon our boy, okay? We just give him a break for a while and then come back. But,
Bring him back.
Like City of Traders, Ancient Tomb, these are like the traditional soul lands. And the reason why they're so good right now is because, like, people are like, oh, you know, remember when we used to run Signets because Signets were good? Well, they have these things now called Talismans, and they're just infinitely better and are unconditional and only ping you for one. Like, they're even better than Tarnished Citadel. So...
you know why? Because legitimately, no joke, that the ability to not always hurt you is good. Like, it's a good fucking alternative cost. Go on.
Tarnished Citadel is just so bad, man. I can't
There's no fucking
can't believe
my
you
head,
defend that card. So anyways.
Okay, the reason...
We're moving on. So, like, we're transitioning to a lot of greedier mana bases where, like, Ancient Tomb and City of Traders are valued so much higher because... You can run less lands because you have those to cast your artifacts that get you there faster. So, like, imagine you're on the play and, you know, in your hand you have a Talisman, an Ancient Tomb, and fucking Arcane Signet, and you draw a City of Traders. Like, all of a sudden on turn four you're producing like five mana. No, you're producing more. One, two. On turn two, you're producing one, two, three, four, six. Five, six mana on turn two. And it's like, that's a greedy-ass mana base. And, like, your City of Traders is literally ritualing itself off the battlefield the next time you play a land, but you're taking that trade because of the amount of value you got ahead of time. It's just like, I don't know. I think that... as we, like, transition to this, like, faster meta where the game is speeding up, because I think that we're getting to an area where you're going to see less stacks decks being prevalent just because they're not winning as often, especially in tournament metas. They're not winning fast enough. And we're getting to a point where there's more time in round, or there's more rounds and draws aren't enough to get you there, that these greedier mana bases that try to take advantage of that short time system are going to just continue to perform at higher and higher levels. So, like, that's why these lands are becoming much more prevalent and why they are so important. Like, even in decks that traditionally didn't run them, like I play Sacred Druid, they didn't play Ancient Tomb for the longest time. Like, it feels bad. You're taking two damage every time. I'm like, yeah, but I get, like, fucking twice as many Thrasios activations because I have an Ancient Tomb. Like, I'm going to value that higher than a fucking colored source because, like, I'm putting lands into play with Thrasios anyways. So, like, it's shit like that that, like, people are kind of throwing on the scale and weighing one opinion over the other. And I just see it a lot. Like, people didn't play City of Traders for fucking years, and now every turbo deck runs a City of Traders, and it's because it's like a good card. It comes down for two, comes down, taps for two. The next turn, it produces another two, and then you get your land drop, and you produce. It's like, I don't know. It's like a ritual. So
yeah, when you play your third land, you get a draw trigger.
Yeah, and I also, I think, Adam, you touched on it. I think soul lands are great in, like, especially in turbo decks, is ramping into the artifacts, which is then, like, City of Traders is new tech, I guess you'd say, like, maybe the last couple months, especially in the tournament settings, or, like, the tournament meta. A lot of turbo decks like Blue Farm, Rog's Eye are transitioning into City of Traders because they treat it as a ritual, not as a land drop. They play it as like a spell. So once you start having the mindset of, oh, this is like basically a ritual that sticks around, instead of playing it as your land drop, really allows you to maximize the potential of that card. So,
plus, I think any deck that runs Reign of Filth should just run fucking City of Traitors. Like, if you're already ready to throw your lands in the trash for mana, like, it does that by itself. It turns itself into garbage. Just play it. Like, it's a good land for a reason. I can't believe more decks didn't play it.
It is weird to see, like, people are, like, just now, like, oh, this is really good. And it's like, I mean, like, the only deck that played it consistently, I think, for a while was Godo. Because Godo was like, let's go burr, baby. I'm trying to get as much mana as possible. And then some other lands like Crystal Vein, like all these lands that are just like kill themselves to produce mana or produce like multiple like colorless pips. It's simply just because like the meta is just getting so fast that like mana acceleration is the best thing you can be doing right now. And game with the ability. Baby. Yeah, it's.
I think that touches on a very interesting point, though. Like, part of the problem is that what happens when decks get super greedy, what happens when decks get really fast like this, you land one or two relevant stacks pieces and then they lose the game. However, because you brought up the idea of tournaments, that's holding stacks decks back. And I get there's logistics to running a tournament. You don't want to watch a fucking stacks deck play its fourth 3-hour game in a row. But it is inherently like, because there's the trifecta of the stacks, the turbo, and the mid-range, and then a little triangle, right? Well, when you time out the mid-range and the stacks, like, what fucking wins, right?
Well,
like,
so
there's no predator.
Well, so like, stop, dude, you're peaking the audio so bad. So something that someone said on Twitter the other day that got pretty popular was like, there's only two archetypes, like there's only two truths to CDH. And the truths are that the meta is either so turbo that it's just about like the game ends on the coin flip and whoever wins the coin flip is most likely going to win the game just because of the base that the way that these decks are built, right? And there's like here, actually, I have the quote right here. I want to read it correctly because I'm already butchering it like super bad. So this is what it is, right? There are two solved format states of CDH. One where there's enough stacks to stop the turbo and mid-range stacks to stop the turbo decks, and the mid-range stacks killer decks reign supreme. And one with not enough stacks where the turbo decks crush everything. Notably, there's no right amount of stacks where stacks wins the game. And that seems to be kind of like the state that we're at right now with CDH. It's like there's either enough stacks to stop turbo and then mid-range wins, or there's not enough stacks to stop turbo and then turbo wins. But stacks is never really winning. And I think that as like we're progressing as a format and more tournaments are happening and the game keeps progressing, the more true I think that gets.
I think that's especially true for tournament metas like Kevin was talking about. Because there's time and rounds. You can't just sit there and watch the stacks player. Like,
you can't activate your Thrasios 33 times and win the game because apparently people go slow. Yeah. I mean, so one of the things that I've gotten from other games, like I played a lot of Hearthstone, like the wild format for fucking like 10 goddamn years. So like I understand that game pretty in and out. I've played like a little bit of competitive Pokemon. Like I've played a moderate amount of Yu-Gi-Oh. The interesting thing about these decks that play lockdown, that play the no fuck you strategy, they don't typically win with like the straight out normal win, and they usually take a long time anyways, right? But most of them pivot to an alternative win condition, such as like forcibly milling you out, or like, you know, just eventually getting a board state that you can't beat, which like Magic can do that too, but EDH pushes that so far that you're never going to win the mill game. That's just literally not a fucking strategy, right? Unless you brain freeze people, but that's a combo strat. Like, you're never going to win the beats game because we haven't printed a 1-mana 9/9 with Hexproof and Haste yet, because that would break the entire game of Magic. But it's about what you would need for CDH to have a real beats plan. So, like, stacks decks don't have a real win condition. They just play the fuck you game and hope that they get there by, like, frustrating their opponents to death. I don't know. Like, it's not a good tournament strategy. Like, yeah, you can get there. I think stacks decks are good decks. They just don't have, like, they don't have their own breach. Like, they don't have a fucking, what's the cheese card, the the Chiefs stands alone. There's a real version of that card. Or like Felidar Sovereign, that would be a cool win condition, right? Like that would be fucking awesome if it worked.
Divine Intervention.
Three mana. Yeah, that's the one.
Best win condition of the game.
Right? So like Stax decks need something like those printed that aren't ass, right? Like you need to be able to land a Felidar Guardian. Not Guardian. Is it Guardian? Sovereign. Felidar Sovereign out of the command zone on turn two. And be like, okay, well, you're under a rule law and a fucking null rod, and also you can't cast cards for zero. Like, you have to get rid of this in one turn cycle. Have fun. That's what Stax decks need. They need a real chance to win the game, and that just doesn't exist. I don't think it'll ever exist. So, as you said, Turbo and then shit that beats Stax. Like, that's the two fucking Predators in the triangle have an unfair advantage because one of the corners is stupid, and when it's not stupid, it's held bound by tournament rules.
True.
Rant over.
Yep.
Rant over. All right.
Soulland's good.
Soulland's good. All right, we're moving
Frog
on.
Frog hipster deck.
To Flavor Text of the Week, where you guys are new listeners to the podcast. It's where I can try to stump the Sad Noz crew and you, the audience, with different cards from across Magic's history. So please use the spoiler text in our Discord channel, the Flavor Text Judge. And by the end... by next week. So, the flavor text for you guys, I'm changing it up, the audience, will be: the old wizard's experiments destroyed the castle centuries ago. So why does some of the rubble look recent? I'll read it again. The old wizard's experiments destroyed the castle centuries ago. So why does some of the rubble look recent? Right.
You know, that's one of the better flavor texts I've heard in a while. It tells a very good story in, like, one to two sentences.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's our flavor text?
I thought it was good.
No. Okay. Stop fucking texting your Twitter thoughts and fucking pay attention.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Moron.
I was getting a, I got sent a meme. I got sent a meme.
Yeah, sure.
Fucking tell your mom hi and fucking pay attention to the podcast.
All right, you guys ready?
Yeah.
No, but yes. Mm.
I give you guys an obscure one that you guys will never get. Or
Scryfall.com.
Okay, but as you gaze
don't
down...
give us... okay. Don't give us a Scryfall one. We'll give us a good one.
A retreat to nature can inspire even the most jaded inventor. A retreat to nature can inspire even the most jaded inventor.
It's gotta be blue-green.
So,
there's no way that it's not blue-green.
So the inventor part should be a giveaway for you guys.
Inventor's fair.
So I was about to say the same thing. Inventor. Who's our, who are in... oh, set-wise, inventors.
Where
are Kaladesh.
Is that
almost certainly Kaladesh. Or Aether of All, whichever one. I don't know.
Kaladesh Plate.
Fatal Push. Blue, it's got to be... oh, God. What's a... is it in... it can't be Indomitable Creativity. I know that card's kind of thought about.
What the hell is
this? CDH staple, I assume.
What?
Again, this is like a playable CDH card as normal.
Okay, I don't know what Aether... okay. I don't know what Kaladesh Plane cards are even CDH playable, to
Aether,
be honest.
Shoot 50-50 Big Boom Man.
Well, maybe it's playable.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, maybe. Do not know yet.
No.
It's probably not the 50 damage artifacts, but I'll go ahead and say that one.
Oh, Aetherflux Reservoir?
Nope.
Yeah, I don't think it was, but might as well shoot it out there. Walking Ballista is probably not the flavor text, but that's okay.
Okay.
I still think it's probably blue-green. Oh, is it Rashmi? Maybe? Is Rashmi from that set? Okay.
Dude, this is a flavor text. All right, so say it again, Kian.
A retreat to nature can inspire even the most jaded inventor.
A retreat to nature can inspire even the most jaded adventure. Oh, Mox Amber.
That was in Dominaria.
That was printed in Dominaria.
Yeah, but it was a good guess.
No, it wasn't.
What is like
you guys haven't asked me what card this is yet.
So, the thing is, I feel like I should be able to grab this, right? Like,
is it a removal spell?
This is the card that Kevin would play.
Oh,
Maybe. Oh, it's in Frog? Is it in Frog?
Maybe. No, it's not in Frog.
It's in Frog. I don't recognize it.
It's not in Frog.
Is it
if
a removal?
I would play it. It's a piece of shit card.
No, is it a removal spell?
It's not a spell.
It's an Assassin's.
It's not a spell.
It's a land.
It's a land. We guys
emergent zone.
Land.
I was right. Emergent
we're doing,
zone.
We're, no.
That was fucking...
That was our devastation.
Dragon Ball fucking
what,
big
what
dragon
lands man. Are from...
We're doing a land fast episode, lands? And you guys over here guesting
the
artifacts.
Fast lands. It's got to be the blue-green one. The UGG one. I'm gonna consult Google. I don't know the name
wait.
Of it. Fast lands.
Wait, wait.
Names.
You think it's... Wait, no. You think it's an opponent land?
No,
you think
no.
It's
fast
the,
land.
So the
it's
land?
The one that says if it's the third or less land, it comes in untapped.
Two or less.
Two or less.
Darkslicksaurus. Two or less. I thought it was three or less. If it's the third one... Yeah, two or less. If it's the third or the last land, yeah. Botanical Sanctum, I'm going to guess. Okay, that was my only guess. a land. Is it the shitty one that can crack for four mana to go get an artifact or something in your hand?
Urza Saga?
That's Inventor's Fair. We already said that. Bro.
I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I already told you the set, and you're out here guessing. Yeah,
I don't know
so,
what. I don't know what. Land,
no, don't you say fucking guys. It's guy.
What playable land came out of the Kaladesh block? I have no idea.
I'm trying to think. I'm not. Oh, it's the fucking five mana one, isn't it? The stupid ass one, Spire of Industry, isn't it?
Oh, is that what it is? Is it Spire of Industry?
Thank you. It's not Spire of Industry.
Oh, no, I was about to say. No, dude, that would have been...
It's
I mean,
fast
that was a
land
good guess.
That Kevin would play, maybe.
Black-green.
Okay, there you go. You're welcome.
I don't know what it's called. Fucking Google it. Blooming Marsh.
Yep.
How is that? That's such a weird flavor text for that. I never would have
that is that. Not a CDH. I don't think fast lands are CDH playable at this point.
Maybe, who cares?
In two-color list, they are.
If they what?
It's the same thing as the fucking the five like the battle bond lands in two color basically.
Oh, it may be in two, maybe a two color.
That's, what I said,
that's
two
a
color.
Stretch.
I mean, anyways, guys, that was flavor text. You get to watch these bozos guess the cards that I choose. So.
Okay,
yeah.
At least I was hitting closer
yeah.
on the target.
Adam was just getting progressively farther away. He started in Dominaria,
like,
and then
is
was
this
like,
Slifer the Sky Dragon?
Is this
a Porsche 911?
Is this Skithrix?
Joe Biden.
Now he's going backwards.
Joe Byron.
Joe Byron.
All right, what the fuck are we doing next?
It looks like
you're
going to ask us a question about what we already talked about.
Okay, the thing I've been teasing at all night, just poking away, making you fucking sore. Okay, what are some of the problems that can arise from us transitioning to a more greedy mana base? Oh, boy, howdy. I mean, I started a bitch about it for a little bit. I mean, you just fall apart to stacks more easily, right? Like, when you build a taller tower, you're building it out of glass. Like, you can't really build a taller tower faster unless you make it shittier. Like, you have to sacrifice quality to go bigger.
What
it's
are you saying, bro? I'm a carpenter. What are we talking about
you
here?
If you want to make 5 mana on turn 3, you have to start playing very questionable cards, right? Like, if you want to make 10 mana on turn 1, you're playing some very, very sus cards. And, like, if the chain gets broken, you fucking lose. I know, imposter emoji. But, like, you have to take this risk, right? Like, when you're building these, like, crazy decks, they want to make, like, a fucking bazillion mana on turn 1 and 2 and 3. Like, you have to play cards that, if you stumble, you've just wasted 4 cards doing nothing. So the answer is you get stacked out. But as we talked about, stacks doesn't fucking win, so, like, people aren't playing stacks. So what is the downside? I don't fucking know. The random mid-range deck that tutors for Oof on turn 1?
I don't know. I think you touched on it. I think it's less of a gameplay and more of... Wait, that doesn't make sense. I think it's like more mulligan, like dependent, like we were touching on before. Because I know,
yeah.
With like when I mulligan, like when I like cut like a land out of blue farm, right? I was down to 27, and I got no fucking lands like whatsoever. Like that may just be like me shuffling wrong or whatever. But as soon as I bumped it up back to like 28, I was like, okay, now I'm getting like two to three lands. This is like actually playable now. So. I think then also transitioning towards like a greedier mana base, right? We're cutting pips we're substituting pips, which are needed for like fast accelerants, which without like mana rocks or anything to actually spend that soul mana on is quite useless. Like, you can sit there like an ancient tomb and a city of traders, and then you have like all double pip spells in your hand, which like for four colorless is kind of bad. At least that's what I felt from like playing like City of Traders, but still on the card. It's still a great card, but that's just one of the downsides. I feel like you substitute the fastness
for pips. I feel you add more randomness and variance, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if you're adding more variance. I feel like you're just making yourself a little bit more vulnerable with a greedier mana base. There are games that you're going to just lose to lose to mulligans, which is fine. You're going to take that loss percentage, right? Like, I feel like that's kind of the direction that the format is headed in, where it's like, okay, 7% or 12% of my games, right, I just lose to bad draws, and that's fine. I'll accept that. But the other, you know, 90 or to 80% of my games, I don't have any problems producing mana or creating mana, especially with the amount of card draw that we have in this format and the amount of card advantage that you can gain when you look at the commanders that are the most prevalent, things like Timna and Krom, spells like Rhystic Study, Mystic Remora, Esper Sentinel, and things like that. I mean, you can be so much more riskier than you could have in the past with the types of hands that you go off with. I mean, a one land Esper Sentinel hand is like gas nowadays. You'll take that any day. And so,
true, but the one dipshit that keeps a removal for the Esper Sentinel, like, you know, if it happens, you just fucking lose.
When have I ever seen an Esper Sentinel get removed?
I've seen it get misstepped. I'm with
you. Sure, I see it get misstepped. I mean, yeah.
I've seen an Esper Sentinel eat a removal spell, though. You're right in that.
Yeah. Regard. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, and even when a Rhystic Study gets removed or a Mystic Remora gets removed, it's usually already too late. Like, if you spend 3 mana on a Rhystic Study and you draw 3 cards, that's a good rate. A Mystic Remora pays for itself the first time someone feeds it. So it's just basically like, with the amount of card advantage, mana acceleration, and things that exist in the format, it's just going to continue to get greedier, especially with the amount of treasures that we can produce out of nothing. 2 mana is like enough to win a game, because if you have a hand with a Dockside or a way to get one, you know, people aren't really countering Docksides. They're countering what comes after the Dockside.
Dude, straight up, the number of fucking games I've seen someone keep, like Savannah, Esper Sentinel pass, and then turn 2, they fucking neoform into a Dockside and then do some dumb shit is just unreal.
Yeah, and that's like, that's why you're allowed to run a greedy mana base. I mean, fuck, even in like my Sans Red decks, like I have Phantasmal Image just to hit a Dockside when someone else plays one, because like the benefits and the acceleration it provides are just too broken. So like, I don't know. The way that I see the format, I don't, like, you run the risk of getting blown out, but like, I mean, when you have cards like Dress Down and shit, like, I mean, it's really easy to play around the cards that blow out fucking these greedy mana bases, and you can kind of just bide your time, because the deck that is normally like taking advantage of the fact that you have a greedy mana base usually isn't winning fast enough to stop you from pivoting, which is like the crazy part about it all.
I also think that you have to take the risk too, because everybody else is taking the risk. So if you don't take the risk, your chances of winning like decreases.
Go down significantly. Yeah. Something that we haven't mentioned that I think we should on the topic of greedy mana bases is it's not just the amount of lands that you run, but also the fact that like 90% of decks in the meta right now are on Tainted Pact mana bases.
Yeah,
and I feel like, yeah, Blood Moon is not as prevalent as it used to be, but like with decks like Winota being as popular as they are and things like Magus of the Moon being in play, it is a scary thing to think about if you're not prepared for it.
For a while, the first like good deck that can Thoracle people and run Blood Moon and like back to basics, it would be a nasty deck. Like, you show me a Grixis list. I don't think one exists at all. But you show me a Grixis list that can play under incredibly, like, strained mana because of Blood Moon and shit, like, via basics or whatever. Like, Blood Moon just fucking wins games. Like, straight up, I have actually lost the game to turn 1 Blood Moon.
Yeah, it's so weird to think about because like the color combos that I think you would want would be like green,
it'd be red, sans white.
Or yeah, I mean sans white or just like green, red, blue, right? I don't know what that color combo is. Gruul with
Teemer.
Blue, Teemer, is that what it is?
Teemer.
Yeah, so I would think it would be like a Teemer deck where you basically run like back to basics, Blood Moon, and fucking. Like maybe I mean, Hermit Druid, maybe Hermit Druid and Euthorical Hermit Druid to win the game.
Like it's all hypothetical, but if Yasharn had been like Teemer colors instead, like I would fucking run Blood Moon. Hell yeah. Like I would run Land Hate out the ass and then
that card
have a
would be
real
fucking bonkers if it was
Teemer. Yeah.
The main point, not even the Land Hate, right? But just like the ability to tutor for two basics. Like right. You give me a Teemer commander that fixes your mana base that works around Blood Moon. I think that deck then becomes very strong because, like, yeah, like, a lot of decks genuinely, if you go turn one fucking Ritual into a Blood Moon or a Magus, Magus is less good, but, like, a lot of decks just go, oh, I fucking lose. I have all colorless lands now, and I can't win the game. And they just fucking, they roll over and die. So, you give me a Blood Moon deck that doesn't suck balls, I'm hype on it.
Unless, like, whenever Spencer plays Godo and he jams a Blood Moon, like, it feels bad. But at least I know I have outs, right? Because I still have, like, Dockside. I still have, like, Artifacts. There's still ways around it. It just sucks. Like, it doesn't immediately hose you if you're in red, at least. Because you have, like, Dockside. I know in, like, Sands Red, you get, like, Dorks and shit. But you don't. If you don't have those out, you kind of get fucked on. But, yeah. Blood Moon wins games.
Mm-hmm.
That is
sadly, none of the decks that play it do.
Hey, Magda wins games.
It won one fucking tournament.
That's all you need, baby. It's all
it,
you need.
It had its freaking glory days.
That's all you need.
13 minutes of fame.
Yeah, basically.
And right there, that Magda shit, that's what I'm talking about, like, in tournaments. Do you run a deck that just fucking sometimes randomly flips its coins to the top? Sometimes, yeah.
It's a different episode.
Yeah. Anyway, so... Now that we've talked ad nauseum about some theories regarding a mana base, let's look into how having a consistent mana affects our play patterns of the deck, and what are some steps that we could take to avoid, to help fix our play patterns as we transition to a greedier mana base. So I'll toss this one to Adam first, and then Kevin. And then I'll bring up the rear. I like the rear.
I mean, how like consistent mana affects the play patterns of decks, and what are some steps?
So like, I'm guessing that the question is effectively like, now that you know that people are going to play greedier mana bases, like, what do you preemptively do to like not get your to fuck yourself over? Like what have you changed about your deck or how you play or how you mulligan?
Yeah.
I mean, I used to, like, run a basic of each type in my library, just, like, in case. I don't do that shit anymore, man. Like, lately, man, like, I deserve to be punished. I'm the guy running the greedy mana base at this point, you know? So, like, I haven't really changed a whole lot. I run Tainted Pact mana bases specifically for cards like Praetor's Grasp to make them more viable. So I can Praetor's Grasp things like other people's Tainted Packs and win with my own Thoracle. You know, shit like that makes like, yeah, I haven't really adjusted my play patterns at all towards greedier mana bases, to be fair. Like, I run decks with Oof because I think Oof is a good way to buy yourself some time if you're a slower strategy. I think that that's like a good way to kind of punish other people's greedier mana bases. But I've been like, I've been balls to the walls, man. Like,
then how did you change your play pattern as you transition towards greedier mana base?
Well,
keep
I just
more counter spells because you know people are going to try to win faster, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like what like while transitioning to greedier mana bases, I think the biggest thing is like doing like building NBC decks as best as you can. NBC decks being like no bad cards, so you cut all the mana that you feel is unnecessary. You cut a lot of the interaction or mid range pieces that aren't really like super beneficial, like a Darcy in a blue farm deck is like a good example. Like, how necessary is it? Not super necessary, right? So like cutting cards like that and then packing more interaction and more win the game cards, like running Mnemonic Betrayal cards that we've talked about in the past or things like that, can really help, like, help your draws become more consistent, especially with having, like, less lands and a greedier mana base to then attempt more wins as the game progresses, is, like, definitely a way. And then, like, just making strong mulligans. Like, I try to mulligan to at least two lands. If I can mulligan to two lands, that's usually, like, that's usually a great way to progress the game, I would say, and, like, consistently be able to cast your spells. If your opener has two lands, there's good odds that you're going to draw a third land by your third turn, and then you can really, like start playing the game at that point, is what I would say. I don't know how you guys have changed.
Side question. With the increase in popularity of soul lands and what I like to call YOLO mana, which is shit like Lotus Petal, like, not quite LED. LED is different. But, like, you know, things that make mana, like a flash in the pan, and then it's gone. How, and with people keeping greedier hands, do you think that wheels should be or have seen more play, right? Because with the greater chance of casting a wheel turn one, and the higher effectiveness of fucking your opponents, ooh, they kept a six, like they finally got a good hand after two mulligans, like, wheel that motherfucker into the trash and try again. Like, do you think that wheels are more powerful now than they used to be, because of this two-sided effect where you can cast them faster and they have a better effect against your opponents?
Thoughts? Wheels are really weird, man. Wheels are in a tough spot for me, because I don't know what camp I sit in. I don't know if I sit in camp wheels are bad or camp wheels are good. Because, like, if you have card draw in the command zone, I think wheels are kind of shit in your deck, because you can consistently, like, fill your hand enough that giving your opponents cards is nothing you want to do. You want your opponents to be strapped on resources, not have enough cards in hand to play the game, and then you are gaining this incremental card advantage that ends up blowing them out the water. I think in decks that don't have that type of card advantage, so decks like Rog'Sai, decks like the Dami Mommies or Timnarog, like those decks that don't have card advantage in the command zone, but are, or like good card advantage in the command zone, I should say, because, like, not all Timna decks have good card advantage. Like, wheels are infinitely better in those strategies, because your card quality is so high that the seven cards you're getting should be infinitely better than the, you know, 21 cards your opponents get. So, and I have seen, like, wheels perform great lately. Like, I don't know. I have, like, this theory that usually one spell is enough to stop someone's win attempt. That's, like, a thing I've been testing lately, is, like, usually you only need one. And I've seen people get blown the fuck out by one spell, like, a lot. But, like, the more I've been playing, the more I'm seeing, like, someone will wheel and no one will interact. And then they go to attempt a win con and no one has interaction because, of, you know, it got wheeled away. Yep. Yeah. So it's such a weird, wheels are such a gray area for me, man, because, like, they're so hard to evaluate. And, I don't know if I can give you, like, a solid answer to that question.
I'll give you a solid answer, oh, Kevin. Wheel good. Seven cards good.
Wheel good.
That's all I need to say. But Adam,
that's
did
fair. Go on.
Adam did touch on, like, good points, right? Because there's always, like, that gray area. How good are they? How are they more beneficial to me than my opponents? And, like, I think that's, like, what you have to look at when you first evaluate, or when you start evaluating wheels, or, like, really looking at it to, like, a deeper level. Because, like, obviously you have, like, Windfall, Wheel of Fortune, right? If you're in those colors, you're obviously playing those cards, right? Because why not? Like, you'd just be stupid not to be playing those. But then you dive into, like, Time Twisters, obviously a hot topic. We've discussed Time Twister ad nauseum on this, on other episodes. And then another one in red is, like, Wheel of Misfortune, right? So when you're looking at those two cards, it's like, do I really need to be running these cards? Is there other cards more beneficial, or is just that straight, like, draw seven just where I want to be at? And is my card value density higher than my opponent's, or is it just high in general that drawing that seven cards will allow me to win the game faster? Which in most cases, yeah, I mean, I think it's my
modified. Yeah, my modified question was basically, like, in decks that do like wheels, have you noticed an increase in, like, them feeling even better because of the mana base greed?
Oh, I mean, yeah, wheels feel good regardless. I mean,
in the decks I mentioned, I mean, wheels are fucking so gas. Wheels are enough to just win the game. like a fresh 7 is like, oh, it got me there. Yeah.
Also, Kian, you're leaving my boy Dark Deal off the table. That's a black wheel. It's playable.
Hey. It's not playable. We don't mention that one, okay? It's under the table.
Also, Adam, another question for you. In Magic, are there more doors or wheels?
Doors, 100%. I mean, what? What's the big door? Door to Destinies? Door of Destinies?
Door to Nothingness, bro. The best CDH staple.
I actually have a Door to Nothingness deck, so you can't even talk to me about that. But are we feeding Aggie treats right now?
Oh, we got dogs on deck right now. It's like feeding catfish right now. I fucking open the bag and they're like. Meow, meow, meow,
meow. Oh, is Trent in there too?
Trey, you big old soft man. Trey. He's right here. He's fuzzing it up. Sorry, they're already getting barky. I gotta feed him.
It's all right. But yeah, that's how I analyze that question. I don't know if you guys want to touch on it anymore.
I mean, I don't think I really play any differently. Like, I mean, I don't know. When I played Najeela, I was like, fuck it. And again, we've bitched about this. You didn't like it. I run Tarnished Citadel because I'm greedy. I don't give a fuck if it hits me for 3. Like, and I'm with you. I'm a full greed ahead. I don't give a shit. Send that ship to harbor and fucking go blast. Like, I don't give a fuck if I'm at 1 life. I don't care if I discard cards. I don't care if I sack all my lands. If I win, I win. And so I'm all aboard the green train. And as I said, like, it's fucking ruined me with Blood Moon. I think the thing I've done is I've just abandoned any care in the world if I get fucking blown out. I just don't care. It's not worth, like, building my deck any different because, like, you can't plan for every contingency. Like, I just accept that, like, oh, if they're going to play some dumb fucking strip mine on turn 1, like, I just lose. Like, it's just game over. Like, I no longer care. It's a mental game of... this fucking CDH is a mockery and we just all roll dice and see what happens. It's a more complicated Krark. That's what it is.
Yeah.
There's like a funny copypasta that's going around that's like the year is 2033 and the pod is just all Rog Sylas players and the game is determined by the dice roll. No one even plays CDH anymore. They just roll dice and shuffle up. It's just like,
I mean, that's even basically fucking joking.
I don't think I've changed how I played. I just feel like I have more faith in my mana base, I guess you would say. Like, I'm gonna get the colors I need.
Kian, I fucking saw you so many times. You'd be like, and you'd like hand me your hand, and it would be a piece of shit. It would be a real fucking pile of shit. Just worthless. And I'm like, Kian, you can't fucking play this. And you'd be like, believe in the deck, bro. And you'd rip a fetch off the top, and suddenly that deck is fucking...
Bro, that was like... I remember showing you that Rog hand. It was turn 1, Adnons with protection, no lands. I was like, I'm going to rip a land off the top. City of Brass. You fucking did. Let's go, baby.
You had a bottle of fucking 2 and 5 to do it, and you did it.
I will say that lately, I do feel like super confident in my mana bases. Like, it's getting to a point where I'm like, oh, are we like starting to solve high color mana bases to the point where like we're hitting consistency now? Because like
it took us long enough. Goddamn, Timna Thrasios has been out for fucking 6 years now, dude.
We're yeah, just I'm
figuring just
like,
this shit out.
More than that. It was just like 2016.
Yeah, 6 years.
Math.
But it's just like, yeah, it definitely feels like no matter what list I'm playing lately, it's just like, okay, mana doesn't ever feel like an issue anymore. I mean, it does happen. Like, there's game. Like, I just played on Alan's stream and got mana screwed 3 games in a row on Timna.
It happens, but most of the time, yeah. we're chilling. I got double white and I got double blue. It's all I need. Let's go.
I think one thing people also don't have a good grasp of is, like, just probability in general. And it's something that I stress a lot. There's some interesting thing college professors will do. Well, they'll tell, like, a class, like, go flip 200 coins and then just, like, write down the results. And the professors will always fail the cheaters. And they're like, how'd you know I cheated? And it's some long, boring thing. But basically, the probability of rolling, like, 7 heads in a row is pretty fucking likely when you roll 200, right? So, like, when you're playing a game of Magic, like, what's the chance that you get, like, a bunch of shitty hands? Like, maybe 10%, 5%, whatever. But, like, you might hit 4 or 5 games in a row where you're like, man, my mana base feels like dog shit, and you'll make changes to your deck, when in reality, that was just a short spree in what would otherwise be a very consistent mana base, you know? So, like, this shit is hard to do because you play, like, 15 games and you make a decision on something when really you should have played 500 games before you, like, truly understand what the mana base feels like.
And, like, the variance there with, like, the, like, shuffling and, like, grouping, like, a lot of players, like, you have, like, your, like, your lands, like, out here. Whatever, you have your lands. You have your lands, like, out, right? Like, all spread out, and then you just pick them all up at once and then shuffle. Like, that gets clumped, and that may, like, impact, like, the variance that you see.
I talked with you about this, because people genuinely fucking forget that, like, your card sleeves get sticky, and they stick together, and when you slide all your lands into one pile and shuffle, you're off. You're probably not a professional poker dealer. You're probably not good at shuffling compared to what you should be. And you're probably also having your land stick together because your fucking sleeves are dirty.
Well, that's why why people go on runs in tournaments, right? Like, you'll get one good hand, like one really good game where you have all your best pieces in play at once. You'll shuffle, and in the next hand, you have two of those pieces in your opener already because, like, they stay consistent and they stay together. So, like, I don't know. It's like it's like a variance thing that happens in CDH. Like, nothing's perfect in a there's a lot of human error involved, so. Like, that shit just happens
just get
a lot.
Automatic fucking deck shufflers, the mechanical
I'm
ones.
I'm not putting my
let's put your frog deck in there and see what happens.
Oh, is that a Judge Promo's Gaia Cradle? Oops, the machine just ripped it in half.
Oopsie daisy. That's the next layer of Clark randomness in fucking CDH. It's just your deck might just fucking explode one day.
See, in 2020, in 2040, we're going to have an automatic deck shuffler for all CDH tournaments. You just plug it in. Put the deck in, and then...
When do I get the fucking Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, holo deck where I get to summon the big-ass monsters and shit, and I don't even need a deck.
At a certain point, like, Magic's just going to be NFTs, and no one will own a physical deck anymore.
That's what fucking MTGO already is, bro. The shit's been gone for a while.
MTGO has a bad user interface. Although, apparently, MTGO, did you guys hear that they're updating it, like, for a format focus on EDH specifically? They're basically going to, like Cube and EDH, they're going to prioritize on MTGO, and Arena is going to be used for other formats.
Good. Fuck Arena.
So it's going to be...
Fuck Arena.
I mean, yeah. But I guess I'd like to put out a disclaimer that, like, don't take our advice for anything. Like, we're
none
not...
of us are
like,
good. We've not won a single tournament.
We're not, like, experts in the format by any means, but, like, we're definitely enfranchised players, and, like, this is... We're just sharing the opinions that we have on, like, mana bases and stuff like that. This also isn't, like, a very insightful episode. Like, we threw down a bunch of random statistics and just, like, talked about what we think works. Because that's what we do when we build decks.
It's a lot of feeling, right? Because, as I said, like, probability isn't a game of, like, you can't just take a small sample. You have to take a shitload of samples. No one's out here playing fucking 15,000 games with Kenrith. You know, maybe fucking Alex is.
Okay,
no,
Alex
is
definitely doing
15,000 games with Kenrith. And, like, with probability, like, you know, and Magic is a very random game, so probability is a very serious part of understanding the game. So, like, if you don't play 1,000 games with Thrasios and with a specific mana base, you're not going to understand exactly whether you need 22 blue pips or 23 blue pips in your lands, you know? So, it's just whatever feels good, but, like, you should use some math to back up, like, what you're doing. Like, you should
also,
at least,
like,
kind of...
Science also, or, like, math, like, doesn't always tell the truth sometimes, too. Like, it could be statistically the right thing, but the way you play and your play patterns, it's... You might want to be casting more green spells than blue spells, but the math tells you to run more blue pips. It's like, well, maybe it's not meant for your play style, and you need to build your mana base around how you play as a player. I mean, I did that. Yeah, I did that with a lot of decks that I brewed early on, where I was like, I'm going to do what I want to do, not what what people tell me to do. And it worked for me. Like, I was winning games, but then, like, you learn, like, it might win games in bad metas, but, like, when you get to higher levels, there's a different type of, like, I don't know. Your deck has to be built to different constraints, and I think, like, we all are starting to learn that as we continue to play more and more often, and, like, fucking more consistently, because, like, I've been playing more Magic now than I have in a while, you know, and I think that, like, getting a little more invested in the online community is definitely attributing to that, you know. Like, there's tournaments going on, like, every couple of weeks now, which is kind of insane. Speaking of, because we're kind of wrapping up here, I guess we'll mention some of the stuff that's going on. I know that Chaos 5 is going on November 5th. I think that the Playing with Power Proving Grounds is going on like the 15th and the 6th. The 15th is today. It's next week. So it's like the 21st. So like right after the Playing with Power Mox, I think it's called the Mox Bowl. Right after that is Chaos 5. And then right after that is Oktoberfest. Oh, we forgot to mention we're going to Oktoberfest too.
We're going to Oktoberfest.
We got like three listeners.
November.
At this point, it's just scorish two times going through for the fucking flavor text.
We at least have 10, okay?
Yeah. I don't know. We have 17 patrons now, which is awesome. So, like, we at least have, like, some dedicated listeners.
We're proud of this community.
Dude, it's crazy. I can't believe people show up damn near every week.
Here, wait. Let's check since we're
watch our bullshit
here.
To watch three idiots stand up here that like that haven't done anything, major in the CDH world and just sit here and talk about.
Well,
dumb
wait.
Shit.
We got one deck. We have one deck on the DDB currently. We have one deck on the DDB that's good.
Yeah.
Holy shit. We're 4 subscribers away from 300, which is pretty sick.
Wookie, dude, let's go.
So once this video drops, we'll probably hit 300, like, once this video drops. So that's really exciting. And then, like, our Discord's, like, at 350 right now, which is fucking crazy. Who in the Discord is not subscribed, by the way? You gotta fucking get on that shit.
Yo, we're
gonna check every
announcement is out right now. At everyone.
Get your papers.
Yeah, but other than that, I don't know. That was a fun topic. It was a little bit like, I don't know. It's a little difficult to talk about because there's so many unknowns. I feel like people love talking about absolutes when it comes to mana, and it's like none of this shit is fucking absolute. Like there's so much variance in the format, and like you can't just like be like this is the perfect thing. It's like no, it's not. Like. It changes. Like you could change one card in your list. Think about that. You could slot out a card in your list and it could fuck up your perfect mana base that you have because you changed like a pip density color. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's just so much variance in when it comes to deck building and shit like that, that like, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is that, you know, people don't really understand that's like they go off of intuition and feel. They don't really know how that works. And like, I guarantee if we made a fucking just a 1 hour like here's how to fucking decide your pips video and use a little bit of math to back it up, people would probably like it, you know, because like people don't really discuss, they don't say why they do things. They're just like, I've played this deck forever. I'm fucking smart. Fuck you. Listen to me. And like, sure, you're probably right. But like, can you give me some just like here?
Some
there's
reasoning.
A 85% chance you get a green on turn two. Like because modern players, like when I played modern. God damn, dude. People would write entire fucking, you know, dissertations on why they played one extra land that taps for black. And I'm like,
and then they still lose.
Yeah.
The amount of written content.
I just watched a recent modern thing. It's all like Jeskai Breach gets Monkey and Ledger Shredder, Grinding Station Breach Lines. It's like, How is this fair in this format?
You're just playing like you're basically playing like CDH but with 4 copies of everything now, and just like consistency is like goes like in CDH consistency goes out the window, and like you have to run tutors and shit to get it, and in 60 cards just like, oh, I have the win in my hand on turn 2 always. Yeah. I don't know. We should get into 60 card. I want to get into like Pioneer and shit.
I still want to play Vintage, man.
I'm doing Legacy, so.
Fuck, all right. We all have different wants, I guess, whatever. But other than that, let's move to our cleanup step and kind of end this one off here.
Discord stack more.
For those of you that haven't already joined our Discord, seriously, we've said it like 1,000 times at this point. Come in there. Come hang out with us. We're playing games all the time. We have like a cool community with people all over the world. We got friends in Germany. We got friends in Denmark. We got friends in Australia. The Australia homies we've been playing games with lately, they've been super cool. Shout out to Moop showing me some cool decks, kicking my ass every once in a while. But yeah, we pride ourselves on being like a really active community in the content space. And we love the feedback that we get from everybody in our Discord. We have a place for episode discussions where you can give us feedback on every episode. Let us know how we're doing. And what you'd like to see improved. And then make sure that you drop a comment, leave a review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We've gotten like tons of really good reviews on there. It's helping push our content out there. We get tons of new viewers because of it. And so make sure if you have the opportunity to leave us a review there, as it helps us to continue to reach new audiences through the algorithm. And before I say goodbye, I want to give a shout out to a couple of our patrons that offered us questions for this week's episode. So I believe we had Scorish, we had Mark, we had Aphelion, we had Tom, we even had Eric all offer input into like this week's episode and some questions for us to answer. So shouts out to you guys for helping us out. And with that, we'll see you on the next one.
See ya.